Becker on a Friday, Ed Graney, Sam Gordon, Jared Justice, Clay off for the day. Big show ahead. Ryan the Hockey Guy, Tony Sanchez, Z Khan, Z Williams, Steph McKenzie, Dollar Loan Center, 9:30. Your chance to win $100 sides and or totals for three NFL games this week. And please be joined now, though. Every time he comes in, we love it. Dr. Caleb Penninger from Crivetti Ortho. Follow the doctor and all the doctors over at Crivetti Ortho. New Twitter handle, listen to this, at Vegas Sports Doc. Also the brand new website, VegasSportsDoc.com. It will roll you right into Crivetti Ortho and at Crivetti Ortho. How are you, Doc?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Good. I wanted to get right into, I was at the game with the Raiders on the opener. And let's go first to, before we get to Jonathan Abram, because he's pretty straightforward in terms of what happened to him and how long he'll be out. Gerrion Conley, and I've been at a lot of games where these things have happened where there's neck or spine involved, there's stingers. And I told you, like, as a writer, it's weird because I know nothing about medicine, obviously, but I always, like, grab my binoculars and I always just look for the feet and the hands. Is he moving his hands? They give thumbs up. They just know, they almost, like, know certain things. When Jonathan Abram, ironically, it was him, when his thigh or knee drove Gerrion Conley's head forward like that, and they brought out the stretcher. What are they first looking for, the doctors and trainers, when they get to him on the sideline?
When they first pull up, they're making sure, is he responsive? Did he get knocked out? Does he have a severe concussion? Or is this a temporary paralysis of an arm, like a stinger? Or is this a spinal cord injury? So they're coming to the situation. They're watching his body. Is he posturing in an abnormal position? Does he have... are his arms held normal across his chest, or does he have almost basically some specific types of muscle spasms that cue you in to tell you that something has severely gone wrong?
Okay.
And then, of course, they're pretty quickly checking, can he see me? Is he opening his eyes? What do his pupils look like? What is he looking around dazed, or is he right there with it? So it's pretty quick assessment through a lot of those initial parts. But then, of course, as you're saying, they're looking for hand movement, for foot movement. Can you feel touch? Can you move those extremities? And all the while, the very last thing you do is have any motion of the spine. And so during that whole process, you look at them, and they don't ask them to sit up. They don't ask them to roll.
They don't move. It doesn't seem like they barely touch them.
Exactly.
In terms of stingers, we've heard this so many years with football players, young as high school kids, had a stinger. Explain to the audience, what in the world, what is a stinger, and how long could the paralysis temporarily last? It must be very scary when it happens because you're not sure if it's going to come back. what is the stinger done to the body to create it?
So what happens is when a football player lowers a shoulder, makes contact, the shoulder gets tractioned away from the neck and the head kind of side bends, so it basically gaps everything around the side of the neck. All the nerves that feed your arm come out of the neck and then run down your arm. And so when you push down on the shoulder and push away with the head, it stretches the whole place. And when that nerve complex is called the brachial plexus, and when you take that hit, it causes a sudden fast stretch, and that will cause those nerves to react. Now, when they react, sometimes they're totally deadened for a short time. Otherwise, it just feels like your arm's on fire. So it depends on how severe that stretch was. Did it just make your hand go numb, or did it make your shoulder burn, or did it leave you with neck pain? And so while those symptoms are happening, you have to watch them. You don't let them play while they're active.
Is it too simple to say that because of the great shape he's in, that hit to the neck would have caused the rest of us in this room a lot more damage, or does that have nothing to do with in terms of he's going 100 miles an hour, the neck is put a certain way, or a younger in-shape guy like that, will he survive that blow? I mean, that might sound simple and silly, but I don't know. Maybe that could have been hit in any of us, and we would have had the same reaction.
No, I think that early on in the season, we see way more stingers and way more problems. So, those kids, for example, the first start of football season when you're young, they start without their helmets, and then they wear their helmets for a little while, and they're doing neck range of motion exercises trying to strengthen the neck because the helmet weighs extra, so you're more likely to injure your neck early because you've had added weight placed upon it. So in addition to that, I mean, he's played football now his whole life, right? So his neck is way stronger. If you and me put that helmet on and we go take a hit like that, we're in big trouble.
Want to touch on a couple other injuries. You see, Los Angeles Chargers now. I still get that mixed up from time to time. L.A. Chargers tight end Hunter Henry, he's likely out 4 to 6 weeks after suffering a tibial what is a tibial plateau fracture to his left knee. Can you put that in layman's terms for us? And what is like a typical recovery of that? What does that look like? Is that a reasonable timetable?
So when they say 4 to 6 weeks, it reminds me of more of a bone contusion or like a very non-displaced. So basically a fracture that has just caused a lot of edema and swelling, not one that's really gone out of alignment. Like, if you know, if you break your arm and then you have that wavy arm, if you have a big deformity to the arm, now you're talking that bone has to do way more than if you just fall and land on your elbow and you bruise the elbow so deep that it causes the bone to have bleeding and bruising inside it. So they call those stress fractures or stress reactions instead of like a angulated fracture. So when the tibial plateau, it's basically where the femur hits the tibia, so the shin bone. So the very uppermost part of the shin bone is the tibial plateau. Your meniscus sit on top of that. The ACL attaches to that. So it's right there in the most important parts of the knee. And with a hit to the side or a real strong force, you can bruise it, you can fracture it. So it usually takes it's a very strong bone in the body. It usually takes a big load. So
4 to 6 weeks is optimistic?
I think so. I mean, it when they say 4 to 6 weeks, that cues me in to think that this is not a very bad one.
Dr. Caleb Penninger, again, new Twitter follower. Follow it now, at Vegas Sports Doc. It'll take you right to at Crivetti Ortho, and also online, new website, at or VegasSportsDoc.com. All the great people over at Crivetti Ortho. I'm going to bring you back to Gerrion Conley's teammate who actually caused the neck injury, not on purpose, obviously, but they're going 100 miles an hour, and his leg goes into him. So John Abrams, I want to ask you about this. So after the game, we talked to Jonathan Abrams. He seemed fine. It was his first game as a rookie. You know, they're always sore. And you always, when you cover these NFL teams, you probably know, like, so the next day, things always pop up. They've rested. They've laid down for 24 hours. And all of a sudden, they come like, that guy seemed fine last night. Now he's out for the year. And it was a situation like that. And when they talked to Gruden early in the morning, obviously the kid was getting tests. He didn't say anything. But later in the day, he said, well, I didn't know at that point what the test would say. Labrum, I think rotator cuff, the surgery is actually today. He's undergoing surgery. He's out for the year. How can a guy like that, is it adrenaline? He said he hurt himself in the first quarter. And he tore the rotator cuff. He had the labrum issue. How do you play through that? Is it adrenaline? Are they just so jacked up they don't realize it? And then the night in bed overnight, and then he probably woke up the next morning and said, wait, this is not good. I mean, take us through that 24 hours of Jonathan Abram playing with this and then finding out the next day.
Well, initially, all these guys, of course, hope that, oh, I just bruised it. Oh, I just sprained it.
Just hurt.
And so if they can still function and still play, you better believe he's not going to come out of that first game, right?
Right.
And so, I mean, he even comments. He says, well, it was hurting, so I started hitting people with my other shoulder. He knew he had done something.
But, he knew the shoulder was hurting.
Yeah. And so he took it and he said, all right, well, can I still play? I mean, I'm not coming out. And he kept on making plays, kept playing a good job. And then when that didn't go away, that's where I'm sure the next day he's like, hey, I got to get this checked out. So early on, we see people play through pretty severe injuries. I mean, you see guys try to go back after they've torn their ACL. They hope it's just a sprain.
Right.
They feel strong. They try, and some can, some can't. But at the end of the day, that Saturday morning clinic or that Monday morning clinic, whenever that times had overnight for this to not go away, they get the check and they say, well, there's more going on here than you think.
So rotator cuff, torn rotator cuff, the labrum, they said he's out for the year. Take us through now what he faces in terms of his rehab. What will they do today in surgery? Just reattach it? And what will they now tell him in terms of rehab and how long it takes?
So with the labrum and a rotator cuff, you're talking about absorbable screws into the bone and then stitches to try to repair it, to use that to repair it back. So there's hardware that goes in. It's usually through a scope. Granted, I mean, that's speculation, but
that's what
the way that I would assume it would be done would be that way. And he's in a sling for 4 to 6 weeks, not using it really at all during that time. The physical therapist and the athletic training team are going to take him through that initial process. And then he's got several phases where, after a little bit, he's going to start doing range of motion on his own. Then he starts building strength. I mean, he's 4 months before he's lifting any substantial weight at all.
4 months?
Mm-hmm.
Is he more susceptible now? Or no? Once the screws dissolve and everything, how strong? Because you've talked to us about how some injuries, you're actually stronger afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to the labrum and the rotator cuff, when the screws dissolve and the stitches are good and everything's healed, how more susceptible is he? Or is it just like it was before he hurt it?
No, I mean, he's going to get back and play hard. And the results of labrum and rotator cuff repair surgery are not 100%. So does he have a higher risk of injury? He sure does.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I always wonder with those kind of injuries, you know, if you come back and you're more pain or just more susceptible, like you said, more susceptible to things like that. I want to change gears. I mean, the Jacksonville Jaguars make this big splash. You go out and get Nick Foles in free agency, and he lasts, what, a couple quarters, not even, goes out with a broken clavicle. Just what does that look like? How does that affect, even if it's a non-throwing shoulder or non-throwing on the non-throwing side, how can that affect a quarterback? And what do you see from that, like in terms of recovery and things of that nature?
So we've seen quarterbacks come back from these somewhat quickly. If you remember, Aaron Rodgers had two of them, right?
Yeah.
And so to get it repaired and to come back the same season, especially this early in the season, totally feasible.
Really?
Yeah.
8 weeks, 6 to 8, or?
I mean, Rodgers was coming back between 5 and 6, if I recall. That was quicker than I thought might
right.
work. But
if someone wants to be with a clavicle, what are you telling them? Normal person off the street, 8?
Yeah, 8 to 10 weeks for the bone to heal.
Okay.
And then you're getting back to it.
It's interesting. There was a really bad – I think no one wanted to see this because they're battling for a playoff spot, and I hated this. I love him as a player. But Kristen Yelich of the Brewers the other day hit the foul ball off the knee and fractured it.
Mm-hmm.
You just talked about the other fractured knee. So I don't tell us about the timetable on a fractured knee, but also he hits for power, obviously. Does it make more of a time in terms of how he can get that back with a stride and when he plants and all that? Or, again, the knee will just heal and he'll be the same way he was. And fractured knee, is that a surgery or is that something you would not operate on?
It didn't sound like it from reading his reports, but a kneecap is frequently a repair. It needs to be fixed.
Surgery.
But the mechanism's not the typical type. I mean, he took a direct blow to it as opposed to a fall where you overflex the knee and that rips the kneecap in pieces. So this is a little different where the ball hit it. It's hard to say what part of the kneecap. You'd assume that then went off one of the corners of the kneecap. And the trick is that you have to then stop the range of motion while the thing heals, because motion can gap it, motion can pull it apart.
So is he cast?
He's probably in a brace.
Brace.
Still walking, putting weight bearing on it.
No motion then?
No motion, yeah. Usually you're no motion, walking in a straight leg brace, and you give that 4 weeks, and then you begin some gentle range of motion as long as things look like they're healing well.
Yeah, I mean, that's an injury that I believe Kyrie Irving and Blake Griffin had on the NBA side. It's fair to assume, right, that given that these are two different sports, these injuries can impact these athletes and their movements in completely different ways. Is that fair to assume?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Interesting.
But will he have power? I mean, if this is a type of blow that I think, can he get his power back? Can he get his
right.
push-off back? I sure think he can.
Dr. Caleb Penninger, follow him at SportsDoc on at Vegas SportsDoc, new Twitter, at Vegas SportsDoc on Twitter, and then VegasSportsDoc.com. Great new website. It'll take you to all the Crivetti Ortho doctors and tell you what they're doing over there. How does your business change at the start of high school season?
It's always real busy that
first
few
say,
weeks.
What did you tell me last time you averaged surgeries a week? Like in the like the first few weeks of high school, or just overall, given your, how many surgeries will you do in a week?
Over a course of a week, between 10 and 12.
Okay, and how many percentage of those are knees?
Ooh, probably at least 40-50%.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So kids nowadays, are you seeing a rise in injuries, or is it the same as it always been? You've talked about on the show earlier about specialization.
Mm-hmm.
These kids who just do one sport all year, they kind of wear down certain parts of their bodies, and they're not kind of all around, they're just one thing. So have you seen a rise in athletic injuries, or do you think in 2019 things are a little more advanced training-wise and they're getting better care out on the fields and at their schools?
The overuse injuries are what seem to continue to climb and climb and climb, and luckily those are less often surgical problems. You know, the injuries in football that need surgery, the injuries in other sports that require any sort of operative work, those are kind of at a steady roll. But
okay.
I would say the overuse, the kids that are playing too many games per year and not taking enough time off, that sure happens more often than it used to.
You mentioned overuse. The first thing I think about is like club basketball, AAU basketball, right, where these kids are playing. You play 30, 35 games in your high school season. You're doing workouts on the weekends, and then you play 50. You're playing 3 or 4 games in one day sometimes on the weekends. Just in the short term, how can playing that much in that short period of time, when you're still developing, what kind of effect can that have on like a 14 or 15 year old kid when he's playing that often?
A lot. I mean, you see these kids get tendonitis, they get stress fractures in their growth plates, they get they're growing so fast the muscles and tendons are trying to keep up with what the bones are doing, and we've talked about just they need more rest than we give them.
Do you have to have hard talks with parents sometimes?
Yeah.
Those must be difficult because of the lunatics out there. I mean, I've read stories from doctors who they won't say who they are, but I mean, obviously you have confidentiality, but they'll talk just on a wide net of parents, youth sports, and they're just like, it's like they're looking at you, they're nodding their head, and the kids out in the field the next day. I mean, it's like, there's just, is that frustrating, or is that just you have to do what you have to do, and you give them the honest opinion, and then whatever they're going to do, they're going to do.
Yeah, they're, you know, they take it or leave it, or they'll go find someone that'll give them the opinion that they want. But the, you know, when the parent comes in and they do 99% of the talking, you know who's trying to push them to play ball. It's often, you know, a lot of these kids, they don't like to hurt. They enjoy the game, but given the opportunity, I mean, you know, it's not their money that's been invested in this. So there's one factor you're already dealing with from the beginning. But it's a lot of these parents hoping that their kid's going to get a college scholarship, and everybody wants their kid to be the next great thing on playing on the weekend.
You guys, I mean, you do so many ACLs, and I remember like, you know, it's like 10, 20, 30 years ago, people just thought they had sprained knees. Is that the fact that medically they hadn't kind of had the advances they do now, or are there more? It just seems like there's more and more ACLs.
Oh yeah, there are.
Why is that?
It's again playing so much at an early age.
Okay, it's just the wear and tear.
Yeah.
Dr. Caleb Penninger over at Crivetti Ortho. Follow him at Vegas Sports Doc. The last question, I guess, is the one we all want to know. How many high-level meetings have there been specifically on Clay Baker's bursitis? You guys, is a huge challenge for you guys over there. Obviously, you guys have had many meetings to try to fix this. The poor guy walks around here like he's 80 every day, holding the back. I mean, it's a horrible sight for this poor kid. Where would you put Clay Baker's physical fitness if you had like a chart up here? And like over here was like the NBA superstar, and down here was like the sloth who's just never moved.
You're talking like the Walker Olympics? Like, are we talking about?
where would we put Clay's percentage in terms of just overall physical fitness? Would you send Clay out into like the battle right now? Would you want him in your foxhole?
If he had a medical bag, and if he maybe had a few grenades around him, I mean, that's about all he's good for right now.
You would allow him to throw a grenade. God love him. We hope he's listening. Dr. Caleb Penninger, follow them all at Crivetti Ortho, but also the new website, VegasSportsDoc.com. And on Twitter, at Vegas Sports Doc, if you have any kind of ortho problem, any kind of knee, back, arm, anything that needs fixed, there's nobody better in the business than Dr. Caleb Penninger, Dr. Mike Crivetti, and everyone over at Orthopedic and Sports Medicine Physician for Crivetti Orthopedics. Thank you, brother.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
You guys have
Take care. Great job again, Dr. Caleb Penninger, at Vegas Sports Doc. When we come back, Ryan Wallace, Ryan the Hockey Guy, VGK, it's opening today. Talk to you then.